You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is my first day back. The new contract is signed. And so what they give me, they gave me C-Dub, JJ, Austin, two of my favorite college players of all time. And I know you're looking and you're like, where's Stephen A? No, we don't have on no colorful shirts. No, we don't have on white ties. And we got the fresh fade with the lining real low. So y'all tune in today. Tap in. We got hoops. We got football. It's going to be a good dang time. And like I said, I'm locked in for three more years. So this is just the beginning.
Hi, hello, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the First Take on a Wednesday. We've got a whole crew coming through today. JJ Redick, Austin Rivers, Brian Clark here. I'm Christine Williamson here from Raleigh. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Doing good?
Yeah, doing well.
I'm a little disappointed you didn't say three of your favorite college players because I played volleyball and I am also one of your favorites.
But I was talking about basketball.
I know, it's fine. It's
and
fine.
Duke.
It's totally okay.
Yeah. I wasn't one of your favorite NBA players?
No.
Okay.
After I watched you play against Garrett Temple and Big Baby.
Wow.
And then I was like, man, they call a lot of unnecessary fouls for JJ Redick. You know, that was a problem.
No whistle that game. I was 3 for 18.
I was 3 for 18. Because the boot boys came to play, and we understood that we had to play you guys and the officials.
I love it.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We got Kimberly Martin, Lewis Riddick coming in a little bit, and we also have John Cena here to talk about his upcoming movie that's happening a little later in the show. But let's get things going, starting with the association. The Celtics' 11-game win streak was snapped last night against the Cavs, who overcame a 22-point deficit in the final frame, in large part due to Dean Wade, who made 5 3-pointers and scored 20 points to win 105-104. Now, with 7 seconds left in the game, Jason Tatum appeared to draw a foul on a fadeaway that the Cavs would later challenge. And the officials ultimately determined it was Tatum's leg that caused the contact. Here he is.
Thought I got fouled, but they didn't think I got fouled. And it's tough because we would have had to tip in. So it's just a weird way to end the game. But, you know, they always say the game isn't won or lost on the last play. It's a lot of things that we didn't do well in that fourth quarter that put us in that position.
JJ, I'm going to start with you on this one. Are you okay with that foul being rescinded?
I'm absolutely okay with the foul being rescinded. The official who called it, Zach Zarba, excellent official, has been in the league a long time, gets to call finals games. He's a top-tier official. You think about the time and score and the situation. Cleveland had already used a challenge early in the fourth quarter on a Jaylen Brown and one on a three-pointer. That got overturned, so they get a second challenge. Zach Zarba knows this. There was enough contact, there was enough proximity between Garland and Tatum, and the time, almost a second-ish left, right? Where if Boston all of a sudden gets, you know, screwed a little bit, if there was a foul, he's going to feel bad. I don't know that he did it intentionally, but it was the right call in the situation to call the foul. Ultimately, it wasn't a foul. Also, I got a question for you, randomly. This thing that NBA players are now allowed to do, like Garland puts his hand on his chest on his follow-through. And by the way, it's not a foul anymore.
Yeah.
There's a montage video on Twitter right now of Dylan Brooks. Every time he contests a shot, he's high-fiving the guy.
Yeah.
As a shooter, the fact that people think that doesn't affect your shot, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
It's ridiculous.
It's pushing you away from the basket. So the whole force of you following through is going negative. That's a tough call. It's a 50-50 call for me. My thing is the only time you should ever be overturning it is if it's just clear.
Yes.
And that, for me, he did kick his leg out, but it's natural, a fadeaway, especially when a guy's going to his right and he has his legs out. You know, do I overturn it? But listen, it's a home game. Yeah, the Travis Kelce bobblehead night. you got all the people there, the big comeback. Dean Wade has a come-to-Jesus moment and has 20 in the fourth. It just seemed like everything was kind of going right for Cleveland to where, you know, that call was made. I have been 50-50 on it. It's a tough one for me. But the hand on the chest for me is an issue.
To me, rescinding it was the issue. But when I listen to JJ, it makes me feel a little differently. In the NFL now, when you have a turnover, every turnover is reviewed. And so there are a ton of turnovers where the officials don't blow the whistle. They allow the play to finish. And now they can go back on replay and either say yes or no, it was or was not a turnover. And they can also mark the ball, right, or also figure out where the ball should be placed. And so listening to JJ, and if an official has that much wherewithal to understand where the game is, where the team is when it comes to challenges, I do think that's a smart way to go about the play. But also, too, like you said, though, JJ, that affects a shooter.
Yep.
Putting your hand on a shooter's chest or the shooter understanding that at some point there could be contact, that affects the way that you follow through. That affects the way that you finish. The other side of this, too, is Jason Tatum saying he held the ball a little bit too long, right? That Jason Tatum didn't move or didn't go at the right point in the shot clock. It also shows kind of the way the Boston Celtics played down the stretch and sort of having a feeling of not showing up in one of those big moments after 11-game win streak.
You know, Jason Tatum brought up something, which was just the offensive rebound. We saw last year, game six in the conference finals, Derek White get an offensive rebound, put it back. So I get his gripe there. The call that was overturned, the and one on Jaylen Brown, is a great example of this. Jaylen Brown shoots a three from the left wing.
Yeah.
He shoots the ball. Darius Garland goes by him and hits his left arm out of the way, and Jaylen Brown sells the call. 5 years ago, that's a defensive foul. That's an and one. There's no challenge there. I don't – again, I'm biased. I was a shooter. That stuff absolutely affects whether or not the ball goes in. It's not just when the ball is released. Yeah. It's everything that happens in that split second afterwards that can affect your shot.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about this matchup. Do you think, JJ, that this is more of a Cavs win or a Celtics loss in this one?
Well, give the Cleveland Cavaliers credit because they played out of their mind. Dean Wade outscored the Boston Celtics
in the fourth quarter,
himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You see this all the time, Austin. A team gets up in the fourth quarter. They're up 93-71 with 9 minutes to go, and they just take their foot off the gas. And it's little stuff, right? With the NBA, the way it's played now in three-pointers, it's not closing out all the way to George Niang in the corner. It's not closing out all the way to Dean Wade. It's turning the ball over on two of three possessions. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that 22-point lead is now 11, 10, 9. Momentum has been lost. And here's my issue where I say it was more the Boston Celtics and not the Cleveland Cavaliers. I want to give the Cavs credit. The Boston Celtics at times in the fourth quarter can get so stagnant. And if you look at the advanced metrics, look, they have the third best clutch record. They have the fourth best offense in the clutch. They have the seventh best offense in the fourth quarter. But they rely too much at times to me on ISO basketball.
Yep.
They rely too much at times in terms of frequency in the fourth quarter. They run the fourth most ISOs. In terms of points per possession on those ISOs, they're 27th in the NBA. Tatum last night, 0 for 4. He had five ISOs. 0 for 4. The fifth one was a chuck to Al Horford, who shot a contested three at the end of the quarter. They don't run great stuff. They rely on exploiting mismatches. And last night, to the Cavs' credit, they couldn't exploit those mismatches.
You feel like sometimes this is just a repetitive thing that we see with this team. My favorite game from the Celtics this year is Christmas Day game when they played against the Lakers. It was all ball movement. They dominated the game. Why have a Jrue Holiday, a Porzingis, a Derek White if we're going to just break it down to ISO basketball at the end of each game? This is what happened to him last year in the playoffs when they ran into a team like Miami. When you run against elite perimeter defense like a guy like Jimmy Butler, guys who can make it difficult, you just pretty much end up seeing a Jaylen Brown Tatum show. And that's what we saw last night. I also have a problem with them. Listen, I have no problem. D. Wade had a great game. Give him credit. Mm-hmm. But, like, yo, after his 10th point or 11th point, that's a guy that you're supposed to go out there and just cut that off. You know what I mean? But that's just a lack of focus. I think they, like you said, they got a little bit ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
But once that momentum shifts, you know how it is. Once it switches, you can't turn it back.
Yeah.
They saw Donovan Mitchell not playing. They figured, okay, we have this game won. I don't want to harp too much on it. They haven't lost in like a month.
Yeah.
This is the best team in the East. Been the best team in the NBA all season. But that's the biggest issue I have with the Celtics right now is how are they going to close games in the crunch time in the playoffs? Is it just going to come down to a Tatum-Brown show? Because Tatum right now is 33% in the clutch. He's one of actually, we talking about, you know, premier players in the league. Yeah. He's one of the worst in the crunch. And this is a guy who, you know, he just said, what was it, a month ago? He wants to be the face of the league?
Yeah.
To do that, you have to know how to finish games. It can't always just be ISO play. My favorite games with Tatum is not when he has 40. It's when he has 26 and 8 assists and 7 rebounds, and he's playing like a real superstar, and that's getting the win playing through his teammates because they have the best supporting cast in basketball.
So I don't have to ask you guys this. So from a football standpoint, a lot of times when you get to the crunch time, the critical moments, we always say players over plays. Yeah. So if you have a great quarterback and a great wide receiver, you want to call something that gets those two people involved. You spoke about sets, JJ. So to you, is it to go away from the ISO ball that involves Jason Tatum when you think he has a matchup, or Jaylen Brown, which could be the best duo in their entire NBA, and involve them in sets so they get touches? Because I feel like that's still the sort of players you want to have the basketball in their hand, though.
Well, it's a great question, Ryan. There's two things to that. So if you look at what they run in the clutch time, it's a lot of Derek White, Jason Tatum pick and rolls.
Okay.
Because Derek White oftentimes is getting guarded by the fifth worst defender on the court. So they want to get that switch, throw the ball back to Tatum, play out of that. So that's how they get to those ISOs, right? They do run a ton of stuff for Derek White and Porzingis. They also run that. That pick and roll duo has been one of the best in the NBA all season. Derek White has been their best clutch player all season. He's over 50% from three on the season in the clutch. The issue for me, and this is long-term, this is not the entirety of a regular season where you have to mix in bad teams with some of these stats.
Right.
The issue for me is when you get deeper and deeper into the playoffs, teams aren't putting bad defenders on a closing lineup.
Yeah.
You get four, fifth. So to me, it's a little more movement. You could still get the ball to Tatum. You can still get the ball to Jaylen Brown, but off of movement. And then create something out of that.
Yeah, and I think it almost felt like panic, right? Because momentum is also about perspective. Like a 10-point game can feel differently. If you've been up by, if you were up 20 and now it's a 10-point game, you're getting a little tighter because now the momentum have shifted. Once the Cleveland Cavaliers started to see the ball go into the rim, they started to play harder. The defense did step up. Right. They were more physical. They did rebound the ball better. They attacked the offensive boards. And to me, to start to believe in the Boston Celtics when you're thinking about the Milwaukee Bucks down the line, the Denver Nuggets soon, and obviously you expect that team to be in contention for a championship, it's about what happens when they need you most. And this team, and you look at Joe Mazzulla last year, you think about the playoffs, they didn't show up in those moments, and I think those were where some of the questions of Tatum and Brown, who are a talented duo, does that duo get you championships? Do you guys believe that they have enough from a talent standpoint and also a coaching standpoint to do that against the higher level players?
They definitely have enough from a talent standpoint. I mean, you look at their roster, I don't know how much better you can really get. You talk about starting lineups, the only other team that even rivals them is probably Denver. When we talk about a team that's been put together, not just with talented players, but complementary players. You got spacing, you got shooting, you got size, they got a stretch four. You got a lockdown defender in Drew Holiday, which I think puts them over the top. That's the main difference from them last year to this year, is you have a guy like Drew. My issue with them, again, is I think sometimes their greatest strength can be their biggest downfall. You have two elite ISO players.
Yeah.
And to JJ's point, I think their best option is when they just have movement. You do need the ball in their hands.
Yeah.
But I think they need guys that they need to use them and put in offenses, you know, that's in set where they have motion, guys moving around. And listen, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Missoula's in a position where he's got to get it done. If they don't get it done this year, go to the finals.
And see, that's the crazy part, though.
You mentioned it. I don't want to say it.
Y'all, you know, he mentioned,
I'm not going to co-sign that one.
He mentioned, though, but you mentioned the entire roster. You mentioned the entire roster and the depth that it has. Once you go ISO ball, you take that away.
Yep.
Now you've made it easier for me to defend.
Okay, we got to leave that conversation there. I want to mention one more thing about Dean Wade, because you talked about how he scored 20 in the fourth. He only scored 14 points in the previous 8 games combined, so his career high 23 was obviously a little bit something that should be,
like
Wade. Austin said. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it. They won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Saquon Barkley has had quite the journey with the Giants after being drafted second overall. He lit the league on fire, winning Rookie of the Year in 2018 while leading the league in scrimmage yards. Now, after a couple of injuries and down years, he ran for 1,300 yards in 2022 and then played on the franchise tag last season when the Giants didn't sign him to a long-term deal. And it came to an end yesterday when the Giants decided not to franchise tag Barkley. The star running back joins a stacked class of free agent running backs, including Derrick Henry and Josh Jacobs. We welcome one Kimberly Martin and Lewis Riddick to the show now. Good to see you. Kimberly, I love this dress. I've already told you like three times a day. And Lewis, great to see you as well. Kmart, I'm going to start with you on this one. What do you think the best fit is for Saquon?
Okay, the most interesting, as we're just talking about on Get Up, is going to be the Cowboys. But the best fit for Saquon from a football standpoint is the Houston Texans. And I just came back from Indy at the Combine, and I was told down there is big interest on both sides there. And it makes sense because when you look at the Texans, the roster that they have under D'Amico Ryans, you've got playmakers, you've got C.J. Stroud. Those two have already teamed up in the offseason, C.J. and Saquon. You've got Tank Dell coming back off of injury. Dalton Schultz, they just brought back, re-signing him. So when you look at the Texans and what they were able to do, considering the fact that we thought C.J. Stroud, hopefully he has a good season. The Texans, I don't know, do they have the pieces? They were hard out in the playoffs, that up until they faced Baltimore. They got rid of the Browns in the postseason. This is a up-and-coming team with an emerging talent. I mean, C.J. Stroud, Offensive Player, Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Saquon and I want to feel loved, something that I haven't felt in a while, I'm seeing the organization that drafted me pay the quarterback a lot of money and still try to, in his mind, might be trying to nickel and dime me. I want to go somewhere where I'm going to a contender and a roster that has talent where I can be the guy, but I don't have to be the only guy. And I think the Texans provide that for him.
Yeah, I think she's absolutely right. And when you're talking about teams that have an opportunity to make waves in the playoffs, it's the Houston Texans. And Kimberly stated that so well. I want to go in a different place. If I'm Ryan Poles in the Chicago Bears.
Uh-oh. You're not going to take me to Chicago.
I would see if Saquon Barkley being a part of my team is something I can make happen. Here's why. This is a team with cap space. This is a team that will have the first overall pick. They have so many draft assets to use, too. This is a heavy wide receiver draft. So now you get an opportunity to add a skill set in that room that's different. You're going to have a young quarterback and Caleb Williams. What's a young quarterback's best friend?
Talk about it.
Okay. And so now you get Saquon Barkley, who's going to have something to prove, who can also be a dump-off asset or a guy that you can get one-on-one with linebackers to get the football out of Caleb Williams' hands if him playing on time is something that you want to see. I believe to add that level of explosivity, to add that level of excitement to an offense that only had DJ Moore last year. Part of what we talk about when we assess Justin Fields has to be that Justin Fields ain't have nobody to give it to or throw it to. And so now you add a guy like Saquon Barkley to what will be Caleb Williams and some of the other pieces you can pick up with your draft capital and also the type of money you will have under the salary cap. I think that could be a big move, but I do believe the Houston move is the biggest for the receiver and that allows that team to step up a level.
If you were Saquon, would you? And somebody said, how about Chicago? Is that where you want to go, RC?
No, if I'm Saquon, I want to go to H-Town. That's the reason I've already talked to C.J. Stroud.
Yes.
But the other thing that talks is money.
Money, fair.
And if the Chicago Bears make it worth his while, that's a place he can go, be wanted, and be used.
Yeah, I think ultimately when you're talking about money, the market's going to dictate that for him.
Yeah.
Look, running backs are not in a position of strength right now. They're really going to more or less have to like accept whatever the market gives them. And with the glut of running backs on the market and the kind of a – you know, the level of talent that's coming out of college and what people have gotten out of third, fourth, fifth round draft picks in relative, you know, when you're comparing production with what they cost, a lot of teams are going to say, hey, look, you know, Saquon, Derrick Henry, I mean, all of you guys are just going to have to kind of wait. You're kind of at our mercy in terms of how we set the market for you. That being said, hey, look, I think Saquon has stated numerous different times that going back to New York is his number one preference, that he wants to retire a Giant, that he wants to be a Giant for life. And I think a lot of times, I mean, Ryan, look, you've been through free agency before. I think a lot of times, you know, your mindset, especially when it comes to changing football teams, has to be right on point in order for you to ultimately give a team the kind of production that they're looking for and for you to be satisfied. And if you're not all in terms of changing locations, if it's not the perfect fit for you, a lot of times you need to really, really investigate whether or not you even want to leave your, you know, original location in the first place. So I think for Saquon, he needs to think long and hard about that. And I'm not saying that, you know, there aren't better football teams out there for him to go to, but I think your mindset is very important in terms of ultimately what your production is going to look like if you go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, going down to Houston, I think philosophically what they like to do in the run game is what really fits what Saquon is best at. I think Bobby Slowick's offense, very similar in terms of run game philosophy to what San Francisco wants to do. That wide zone, one cut, cut the backside of the defense, create a seam, and hit it downhill type of scheme is perfect for Saquon. I think the threat of him being a home run threat, the threat of CJ pulling that and throwing the football, puts defenses in a bind. It just does. And that, obviously, with the usage of, I mean, with the use of different formation grouping, or rather personnel groupings, formation variation, motion, it's going to create a lot of opportunities, I think, for a guy like Saquon that maybe he's just not getting in New York. Maybe the offense just isn't quite the same. So I think it would really highlight his talents. The question is, does he really want to move on? Because your mind has to be right. And look, if you've talked to C.J. Stroud, I haven't talked to Saquon Barkley about ultimately what he wants or what he thinks the best fit for him is, but it seems like on paper, Houston would make a lot of sense. It is a team that there's a lot of good feelings around. And in New York, you tell me. I mean, it's a rhetorical question, quite honestly. Are there a lot of good feelings around New York right now for anyone?
No.
Right.
No.
We'll see.
Yeah, you know, when I think about, I understand wanting to stay with the place that drafted you. There's the emotional piece of it. I want to end my career as a New York Giant. And as I've watched Saquon over his career, he has always handled himself and comported himself the way we always say, he does it the right way, which is why you want to see him compensated, those type of players who carry the offense without complaining. But at the same time, though, guys, if you don't love me like I think I deserve to be loved, and somebody over here is going to show me love, but also the compensation, and also there are no questions about the quarterback that I will be playing with, I need Saquon to not care about the emotion and just follow logic for a second, because he has always sort of wanted to be the do-right guy by the Giants. But I think in this stage of his career, what makes sense for him on the football field and also having a chance at the playoffs, a chance at going deep in the playoffs, is Houston.
Well, you know, it's always about leverage, right? And so if you're the New York Giants, here's your leverage. He's a New Jersey kid.
Yes.
Right? He gets to play for an organization that he grew up watching. His parents are close. His friends are around. Yeah. And you've also built this life over the last 4 or 5 years that feels extremely comfortable. And so for Saquon Barkley, it's going to be stepping out of that comfort zone and realizing what's best for my career. What's best for your career is go to a place that when Devin Singletary played well in Bobby Slowick's offense, there was no stopping the Houston Texans because of who they had at quarterback. A defense that's going to continue to get better under head coach and defensive coordinator DeMeco Ryans. And I'm never going to tell somebody take $9.99 on $10, right? If you believe you're supposed to get 10, if you put 10 out, you're supposed to get 10 back.
Right.
But it's about being smart at at and looking at where can my career continue to flourish? Where can I be in meaningful football games and continue to build my legacy? Plant my feet down and say, I'm going to be here the next 4 or 5 years as a running back, because we know how quick the league gives up on you.
Right.
And I think Houston can provide that, especially if you develop a relationship with their young QB.
All right, Lewis, anything you want to add there?
What we're saying is you got to marry the personal with the professional. And at this point, maybe the professional will win out. Maybe the market will speak in his favor in terms of it being best for him to go elsewhere. And maybe it will. I'm just saying, like, it's stacked against the running backs once again, because the market is absolutely deep in terms of veteran runners. Some of them have mileage, some of them don't. Some of them are going to come at tremendous value. And then what the draft is bringing and what precedent has already shown you, which is teams are looking for the next Isaiah Pacheco. They're looking for it. They're looking for cost-cutting measures at certain positions, and running back is square in their crosshairs. I'm just hoping that he doesn't get caught up in it and he gets to a place where personally he's happy and professionally they win football games. That's what you want for a guy like Saquon Barkley.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Since 2018, Barkley ranks fifth in the NFL with 99 scrimmage yards per game. All right, we'll leave it there.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We now welcome in 16-time WWE World Champ, actor, and the man, the myth, the lie, Ricky Sinicky, a.k.a. John Cena.
Hello.
Hello. So good to have you here. That looks
so much.
A lot of fun.
It
looks hilarious.
It was a bunch of fun to do, and I hope everybody goes on Prime Video and watches Ricky Sinicky and laughs as much as we did.
Yeah, I'm very excited to watch it. Why did you decide that this was a good fit for you?
Oh, goodness. Comedies are the gift because your work is fun. It's just you make each other laugh all day, but the hard work comes now, where we hope our jokes land with the audience. So I'm really excited for it to get out to the world, and we're out tomorrow, and it's just a very exciting time. I hope everybody has a lot of fun watching this movie.
You know, John, playing Ricky Stanicki was like acting within acting, because he was a big lie. So you have to become this character for these three dudes who've been lying to their wives, their mothers, and everybody else to use you as an excuse to go have fun. But you also have to create a character to become John Cena, to do what you were able to do in the wrestling world. How do you draw upon those experiences when it comes to making these movies?
First, great point. Second, great question. I always say my time in the WWE has prepared me for life. Just as with sport, I think athletes have a lot of experiences during their career. Embarrassment, success, excitement, failure, sadness, heartbreak, highs, lows. The advantage of teamwork and working with a group, being coachable, showing up on time, all those things I carry from not only athletics, but from WWE over to being on screen.
Why? Because I feel like it's a very hard transition to make for a lot of people. I'm sure a lot of athletes, former athletes, would love to be doing what you, The Rock, et cetera, are doing. Why did you think it would be a good fit for you?
Well, because I, I, I love this, and I can't believe it qualifies as a job. I think any growth is hard. I think physical fitness is a great example of this. If we want to train to grow, we have to put ourselves through pain, and we understand that, like, feeling the burn is a metaphor we can use for physical transformation. But I think any change equals growth, and growth is hard. But if you love what you do, you're okay with those hard days.
Well, you know, today I'm sitting in Stephen A's seat, and, like, this is the best dress this seat is going to be for the entire year.
Shots fired.
You know, and what
Shots
I love about you
fired.
Is every time you get an opportunity to throw the three-piece on, you're always ready to go.
Oh,
but the true question is, three-piece or jorts?
So it depends. It depends. If we're talking WrestleMania 40, crossing my fingers, I hope the jorts are there. If we're talking First Take, I will do my best to put on a waistcoat for you.
You should have worn the jorts today. That would have been great. Okay, so I saw something that you said recently. You said you're Mount Rushmore of WWE athletes. The Rock, Roman Reigns, Hulk Hogan, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think a lot of people would probably put you in that.
Yeah.
But I do want to say it's Women's History Month.
Yeah.
So who are your top three women's wrestlers?
That's a great question. I'm going to change the monument. We'll go top five.
Oh, okay. I like that.
I see Bayley, Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, and Charlotte Flair.
Those are pretty solid. Five.
Yeah, like, so I have got an opportunity now to get close to Ric Flair, right? And just, like, just an awesome dude.
Rick has an energy about
it. Right, and I think sometimes he forgets he's Ric Flair. You know, and, like, every room he walks into, people are excited to see him. It's the same thing for the John Cena. It's the same thing for The Rock. You mentioned comedy being a gift. Even though we understand the entertainment of WWE, mm-hmm. all of you guys are tough guys to us, right? Extreme athletes to be able to do what you do. Why has comedy been the genre that's fit you so well? And how did you become so comfortable in it? Because it's such a departure from John Cena, the wrestler.
You guys have great questions today. Thank you so much. I think WWE is so physically and dramatically forward, our narratives are sports narratives through entertainment, that you don't have a lot of space to laugh at yourself. But if you looked at my existence in WWE, there are plenty of moments where I don't take myself seriously, the jorts being one, the joke of I'm still invisible being another. So this is a chance for me to just show another dimension of your person. When you're with somebody like Ric Flair, you do get the Ric Flair experience when you spend time with them. But there's also a deeper human to Rick. And I think opportunities like this allow me to just show a little bit more who I am.
You talked about how the transition, it was a challenge for you because you had to push yourself and stretch yourself. What do you think has been the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome as you become more of an actor in that role?
So, again, great question. I would even further that as to a challenge that a lot of us face during life. Being okay to take yourself as enough and that you are worthy of love, and that allows you to be vulnerable and be authentic and be yourself. And I think when you are yourself, people attach themselves to that, even mm-hmm. in a positive or negative light. We do it all the time in WWE. I like this person or I hate this person because how they're behaving. But it's that bravery to just be authentic and vulnerable. And that's a hard challenge in life. That's not just a profession specific.
My last question would be this. You know, Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, the greatest football player to have ever lived. You're somewhat his muse, right? You're from Massachusetts. Tom Brady was comfortable being in Massachusetts when he could be connected to John Cena. John Cena now makes his home in Tampa, and lo and behold, Tom Brady follows you there and That's wins the championship. Because you said, you know what, I'm from Florida now, and Tom Brady wanted a piece of that. Knowing that you're his inspiration, how does that make you feel?
Well, fan fiction is a strong thing, I sense, you know, Tom's a very creative guy, is not only an accomplished athlete, and I sense maybe a buddy comedy on the horizon. So, Tom, if you're listening, I'm available, and I take all calls, especially from Tom Brady.
Okay, so obviously we know that Stephen A is a guy that he's here usually, and that's as our seaman.
But we can't see him today.
We can't see him, exactly.
I know what you did, Stephen.
I want to know, okay, if Stephen A were to do anything in the WWE, how good of a manager do you feel like he would be?
So I think he would be tempted to do more than manage. He is... He is what we do in the WWE. He's entertaining. His personality is undeniable. He has a gravity to him. you feel a certain way about him, whether you're a supporter or an opposition.
Yeah.
He is what we try to achieve in the WWE. That's why I think that's why we have such great mutual respect for each other. I saw him at WrestleMania last year. He's always so kind to us and so kind to everybody in our locker room. And I think that's because we're kind of all in the same gang.
Awesome. One more thing.
Sure.
What are we going to get out of Ricky Sinicky? We saw the preview.
What are you going to get? What are you going to get? Yeah. Hopefully you laugh. Ricky Sinicky, the trailer is great. I'm laughing already just watching it. Hey, just watch Ricky Sinicky. It's on Prime Video. We're coming out tomorrow. Make sure to watch it, and it's a chance to laugh.
Yeah, we'll definitely be watching.
All right. Thank you so much.
I saw you pee your pants in it, all that.
I did pee my pants in it. Wow, I've...
You,
not really.
Water,
not really.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
No. You're not one of those method actors.
No,
that
honestly,
need to...
it's not what you think. Just pee.
Just pee.
That's exactly what you
By
said.
By the way,
too.
Great questions today, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. Ricky Sinicky out tomorrow on Amazon Prime Video. Thanks, John.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Welcome back to First Take, coming to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Grey Goose. All right, it's time for a quick take. The Heat beat the Pistons last night. They've won 7 of their last 8. JJ, how dangerous do you think this Miami Heat team can be in the playoffs?
They are very dangerous. And look, everybody's going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks and the run they've been on, the Boston Celtics and the run they've been on. The Heat had a 7-game losing streak at the end of January. Since then, they are 11-3, number 2 defense in the league over the last 14 games. They've got balance, they've got depth, and most importantly, playoff Jimmy is coming. He has been incredible since the All-Star break. 26 points a game. He's getting to the free throw line. He's shooting threes. He's playmaking. This is a team nobody wants to see in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. That's why they call him Jimmy Buckets. All right, let's go to the Western Conference. The Suns were able to hold off the Nuggets last night. In overtime, KD had 35 for Phoenix, including 8 in overtime, and the shorthanded Suns rebounded after blowing a 22-point lead in the second half, winning 117-107. Now, with this win, the Suns extend their lead over play-in teams. Now, a full game clear of the Kings. Phoenix does have the hardest remaining schedule in the league, so every win is absolutely crucial. In fact, 2 of their next 4 games are against Boston. We got JJ Redick here, and we got Austin Rivers here joining RC. Austin, I'm going to start with you. What did KD leading the Suns to a win prove to you about Phoenix?
Well, for one, what we already know. KD can close games like no other. We talk about longevity with LeBron James. We talk about it with Stephen Curry. A lot of times we leave KD out the mix. This is a guy who's in his late 30s, still propelling teams to win. Can get a shot over anybody at any time. Big win in Denver last night without Devin Booker, who's probably, I don't want to say their best player, but maybe their most important player. Mm-hmm. They're dangerous. You know, this is a team that you don't want to see first round. We're talking about a team that's a pencil-in or possible bubble team. They have shooting. Grayson Allen is having a career year. Eric Gordon can shoot the lights out. Mm-hmm. Royce O'Neal's been a very slept-on pickup, a guy who can guard in today's game 1-4. Nurkic has size and at least somebody who can bang around with Jokic down there. And then, obviously, at the helm, you have Kevin Durant, Brad Beal, and Devin Booker. This is a team that has firepower. And in the playoffs, when the game slows down and you need guys who can get a bucket on their own, they have three of them. Yeah. Brad Beal has to continue to find his way and find his fit. I always like to compare him to Ray Allen, that team in 08 to Boston. He was a guy who was his own show when he was with Milwaukee and in Seattle, but then when he went to Boston, was able to figure out a way to get shots off the catch and shoot. I think Brad needs to be a guy who can do his ISO stuff, but needs to continue to do stuff more catch and shoot and play through Kevin and Devin. This is a team that you don't want to see early on.
Yeah, I've said this a ton this season, and I said it yesterday on the show when we talked about the Suns. One of the issues when you decide to build a super team is that you are giving up some roster flexibility and depth. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so this team was always going to struggle in the win-loss column if one of these guys got hurt.
Yep.
Kevin Durant has missed 7 games. Booker now has missed 12 games. Bradley Beal has missed 29 games. Mm-hmm. They just haven't had the depth. Austin brings up Royce O'Neal. Look, their top seven, I put their top seven against almost any team in basketball. When we talk about Nurkic, Grayson Allen, Eric Gordon, Royce O'Neal, and the big three, they all complement each other. You can look at lineup data, right? And of any five-man lineup that has played over 250 minutes together, they have one of five of those lineups that have outscored opponents by more than 10 points per 100 possessions. They are a good team when they're healthy.
Yeah.
They're an absolutely good team. The other thing that I like about their team right now, assuming health in the playoffs, they can play a number of ways. Mm-hmm. So they can play big with Nurkic, use him as a hub offensively. I think he's had an outstanding season. They can go small with Kevin Durant at the five and just outshoot you. Sweet. Grayson Allen has been a perfect complementary player. He's having a career year, leading the NBA in three-point percentage, had another big night last night.
Yeah.
This is a really good basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend so much time talking about the Lakers. We spend so much time talking about the four best teams in the Western Conference. We should not be overlooking the Phoenix Suns when it comes to real playoff runs and real playoff contention. They are a damn good basketball
team. But isn't that what happens? Like, when the Boston Celtics put together the big three, it was this phenomenon, right? We felt like, okay, we hadn't really seen anything like this. You get these superstars that come together to win a championship. And then when we saw it in Miami, we threw a parade before they earned an actual parade. And so even in seeing Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, D-Book all get together, there was that initial excitement, but we've now learned that we have to wait and see. And like you said, JJ, there were so many injuries, especially Bradley earlier, early on in the year. He couldn't get on the court. And so when I watch basketball, to me, it's about chemistry, right? Like the beauty in the motion of offense, and when the ball doesn't touch the ground, when everybody get opportunities to get their shots, you can't develop that if you don't get time together. And to me, when you ask the question, what did they show us by winning last night, is that when KD wants to, like, he's unstoppable.
Yeah.
Right? When KD makes a decision to get his buckets, he could get those. But my question is, when you look at these lineups, when you say when they go big with Nurkic, can they score enough? Who is having a great year? If you go small with Kevin Durant, can you get enough stops in order to win against what you guys both say is elevated competition in the playoffs? This team isn't going to be judged by how many regular season games they can win. So my question to you guys both is, how much of a championship contender are the Phoenix Suns right now?
Well, I want to go back to something you said. You brought up the Boston Celtics big three. You brought up the Miami Heat big three. I would say this. The depth of talent in the league right now is spread across multiple teams.
Mm-hmm.
That felt like to me in 08, and I was in my second year, that the depth of talent was so concentrated amongst a couple teams.
Okay.
Even when the Miami Heat first got together, it felt like the depth of talent was concentrated amongst few teams. We saw four straight years with the Warriors-Cavs.
Right.
It was almost a foregone conclusion, particularly in the Eastern Conference, that the Cavs were going to come out. And then Kevin Durant goes to the Warriors. It was a foregone conclusion they were coming out of the West.
Right.
Yeah. There's no foregone conclusion right now in the NBA because the depth of talent is spread across multiple teams. And that's why having a deeper rotation matters.
Right.
That's why having a deeper rotation matters in the NBA right now. I look at the Phoenix Suns as a title contender. They're not in my tier one.
Right.
Maybe they're towards the bottom of my tier two. We brought up the Boston Celtics, by the way, and their struggles at times in the fourth quarter with stagnation on offense. The Phoenix Suns have been the worst fourth quarter team in the NBA all season. And to me, it's because of the same thing. It's some of that default to ISO ball. It's that default to ISO ball.
Well, you have such good players, man. How hard is it not to say if you're a coach or if you're like the other guy on the court, go home, get this rock. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it is hard because we've seen him come through in times or so many times, him and Devin. But I referenced the Ray Allen with Brad just because this is a new situation for someone like Brad Beal. He's always been the best player on his team. Now he's not the first nor second option. This is a whole new field for him. That's why I referenced the Ray Allen thing, because this is now something for him to fall back on and become more of a catch and shoot player.
Is he that sort of shooter though?
Well,
like Ray Allen is one of the greatest shooters of all time.
I'm not saying he's Ray Allen, but he can. I mean, we saw last night, even though he struggled, he hit big shots. And also believe, you know, Devin Booker had to, you know, we talk about assists this year. He blew everybody out the water in terms of seeing his capability of playing the pick and roll. So we'll see.
Ryan, if you look at Bradley Beal's shot profile early in his career, when he was playing with prime John Wall, he was shooting well over 40% on catch and shoot three. Towards the end of his tenure in Washington, the vast majority of his threes became about self-creation and off the dribble threes and tougher shots. He's in a position now as that third option where he can rely more on that catch and shoot three rather than self-creation.
I do want to mention, because JJ, you were talking about their fourth quarter struggles. They remain last in points differential, net efficiency, offensive efficiency, and assist to turnover ratio in the fourth quarter of the season. Austin, how deep of a playoff run do you think this Phoenix team can make?
Well, unfortunately for them, if they are in the play-in, they're going to end up matching up with like a Denver or something like that first round. So if that's the case, I don't know how deep they can go. I think these last set of games for them is vital. We talked about it. They have the toughest schedule remaining. They got a big win in Denver last night. If this team can close out strong and get a little bit better seating where they're playing some of these middle pack teams, they could make a run. At the end of the day, we all know how the playoffs goes. The game slows down. It gets more physical. We got guys we've seen done it before. Kevin Durant, however you like it, has won championships. He's been there. We have guys with playoff experience. Devin Booker went to the finals. We have Eric Gordon, another seasoned player. They have players who have been in the playoffs, vets who know how to play. They have multiple, like you said, ways to finish games with lineups. They can go small and switch, or you can go big with Nurkic, depending on who they're playing. They have shooting that could spread the floor. And in the playoffs, you got to put the ball in the basket. The game's going to slow down. You're not going to be getting all these fast break points. You know, that's why we talked about with Milwaukee earlier, how important it is for Dame to be there, because they got a closer with Giannis, because his inability sometimes to get in the paint. This is, they got guys who can make tough shots time and time. You know, I don't know. I think they can win. If they run into Denver.
And that's the other thing, too. Like, when you look at the top of the West, they're so tight, right? OKC, Minnesota, Denver. Like, you don't know which of those teams you'd play, but obviously getting a matchup against Denver early seems like a death.
Well, you can't have that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we'll leave that one there.